Welcome to the Passive Income Through Multifamily Real Estate Podcast, brought to you by Limitless Estates, where Kyle and Lolita talk to top experts and seasoned passive investors in the business to help provide clarity and key insights to keep you safe on your journey to financial freedom. Our goal is to help you get educated on how to create passive income for you and your family using real estate as your vehicle. If you enjoy the show, please go to iTunes and leave a rating and written review to help us grow and reach more listeners. Now, here are your hosts, Kyle and Lolita.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Passive Income Through Multifamily Real Estate Podcast. I'm your co-host, Lolita, also joined by Kyle. Before we get started, please make sure to head over to our website, limitless-estates.com, and grab our free Passive Investors Guide. Also, if you're interested in learning more about what we do, you can schedule a call with Kyle on our website as well. All right, let's get into our show. Today on the show, we have Tim Bratz joining us. Tim, glad to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing awesome. Kyle and Lolita, thank you for having me.
All right. Well, before we head into the interview, here's a little bit more about Tim. Tim is the CEO and founder of Legacy Wealth Holdings, which is a real estate investment company that acquires and transforms distressed commercial and apartment buildings into high-performance investment assets. Working in real estate, Tim has learned how to build a passive business and create residual income that allows him to live the lifestyle of his choice. Tim's investment companies currently owns over 3,700 rental units across 8 different states, equivalent to a $300 million portfolio. So super impressive. I'm excited for today's interview because I know we'll be discussing some items we've never talked about on the show. So let's go ahead and get started. And Tim, please tell the listeners a little bit more about yourself and what you currently do.
Sure. Well, again, thanks for having me. Appreciate all the value that you guys put out there. So excited to be here. My background is in residential real estate. Actually, the only thing I've ever known is real estate. I was going through college when the market was going gangbusters back in 2003 to 2007. And everybody said, hey, if you have a pulse and you have a good fog of mirror, essentially, you can make money in real estate. And that's what motivated a 20-year-old kid back then. So after I graduated college in 2007, I'm from Ohio originally. I ended up moving out to New York City. And my brother was living out there. I shacked up with him and got a job. I thought that what you do is you become a real estate agent in order to get involved in real estate. So I got my real estate license. And then instead of getting into the residential, like brokering houses and stuff, I like the idea of working for like a commercial brokerage. And so I got a job working for a commercial brokerage as an agent. I got a bunch of dumpy listings of side street retail spaces and 400 square foot spaces and things like that in Manhattan. It took me about 8 months to close my first deal. And it was at the corner of Bleecker and Thompson in Manhattan. And it was 400 square feet. And I signed a lease with like a falafel shop, I think it was. And they signed a lease for 400 square feet at $10,000 per month with a 4% annual increase and a 12-year lease term. And, you know, me, 21-year-old, 22-year-old kid, I started doing the math on this thing. And I'm like, holy cow, the landlord is going to make almost $2 million over the next 12 years for doing something at one point in time. And I think a lot of us get involved in real estate for that allure of passive income and residual income, that mailbox money. But then we all get stuck in this transactional trap of trading our time for money and kind of on that rat race, right? That hamster wheel. And so that's what happened to me anyways. And I decided I want to become an investor, but I thought I need to go stockpile a bunch of cash in order to buy these passive income producing assets. And I moved out of New York City, moved down to Charleston, South Carolina. And I got into like flipping houses and I was flipping high-end houses. Pretty much everything was low-end house, stuff that was in the hood. And then I got into wholesaling and then I got into wholesaling a lot. And I ended up meeting people who had money, who maybe didn't have the bandwidth or the knowledge in order to buy houses. And I had the skill set to do that. And then they had the cash. We ended up doing some sort of like equity split. Built up a little bit of a portfolio. By the time I was 25 years old, I wasn't rich, but I was financially free. You know, I had 10 units. It covered all my operating expenses for the properties, covered all the debt service, and covered my living expenses, and put a couple bucks in my pocket. Again, after everything, about $1,000 to $1,500 a month of like just free cash flow after all my living expenses and everything were covered. And so I wasn't rich, but essentially I was financially free. And got into another business that was kind of chasing the shiny object. That didn't end up working out. I ended up selling my real estate because I was like all in on this other business and went completely broke, like to the point where I was paying for gas with coins out of the cup holder in my car. And I was intermittent fasting before it was cool to intermittent fast, right? Like I would go not eat breakfast, go to Subway, get a foot long sub for $5 per day, and eat half of it for lunch and half of it for dinner and then not eat again until the next day. And that was August 2012. I had $24,970 in credit card debt and I had about $80 cash to my name. I had to borrow money to make the minimum payment on my credit card that month. And I was just like, what the hell am I doing? I need to get out of this. And let me go back to like what I knew, right? I didn't even know what the hell I was doing in real estate, but I was financially free at 25 years old. So left Charleston, South Carolina, moved back to Cleveland, Ohio, and essentially moved back in with my parents for a year and then got engaged and moved into a family house that was owned by my wife's grandparents for a couple years. Just kind of got back into rebuilding. And when I got back into rebuilding the real estate side of things, a couple guys reached out to me and said, hey, you know, we got into this other business that I was in before. We'd have enough cash to go invest in real estate. What if we invested with you? Will you go and deploy the money? We'll figure out some sort of split. So they put up few hundred thousand dollars and I kind of kept on rolling it up and trading it up and did a lot of stuff and bought low-end houses, high-end houses, like fix and flips, some single family rental properties. This is again 2012, 2013 now. And then I fell into an 8-unit apartment building at that time. It came across my desk. It was just like stupid cheap, 8 units in like a C-class neighborhood for $30,000. And so I'm like, done, right? We'll buy it, put another 50 grand into it. I'm all in for 80 grand. And had a net income of $27,000 per year. And so I'm getting like a 33% cap rate on this thing. And I remember sitting back after that year of working with these guys and thinking, okay, here's all the different assets that I invested in. And here's what the return on investment was on each one of them. What gave me the highest return? And what also offers the scalability and the efficiencies in order to meet my goals, in order to meet my ambitions? And it was apartments. You know, flipping houses was cool, but flipping apartments was even better because if it didn't sell, I didn't care because I had the cash flow. If it did, I'd make the same kind of return. Plus, when you add in all the rents and everything and not having to carry those holding costs, it was just a better deal. And so I just kept on trading up. I decided to focus solely on apartments. I kept on trading up, built up about 140, 150 units here in Cleveland, Ohio. And then that partnership went away. You know, I mean, a lot of times business partnerships, everybody's got good ambitions and good goals and everybody's happy on the front end. And when you lose money, the real character of somebody comes out and God forbid you make money, people can get even nastier, right? And mm-hmm. We were making money and it just, everything wasn't balanced and the amount of value that I was bringing was not seen eye to eye to the amount of value that they were bringing. And we just decided to liquidate everything. So that was kind of tough. We both lawyered up and got really, really difficult for a couple of weeks there and really stressful. And it's one of those things where you're like, I just spent the past 4 years of my life building up this business. What the heck am I going to do? Now I got to start all over. But I found that when one door closes in your life, a window will open or another door will open. And what happened is it just kind of set me free. I got this heavy weight off my shoulders and people came out of the woodwork and like, dude, I wanted to work with you, but you had that relationship with those guys. So I never really approached you on that. And can I invest with you? Can I do deals with you? Can we joint venture on projects? Can we do all these things? And so it really opened me up for more opportunity. Built up a turnkey company where I was flipping about 100 turnkey houses a year, then a property management company. And then I got back into apartments once I had a little bit of cash built up on my own. And one day I just looked back and remember it was about 2.5 years ago, I mean, almost 3 years ago now, where I remember looking back and sitting and reflecting on what my net worth was and where was I spending my time. And 90% of my net worth came from my apartment buildings. And it was about 10% of my time. So I sold the management company, shut down the turnkey operation, pivoted our team only to go out and buying apartment buildings. And I had a couple hundred units again at that time. But it's amazing when you draw a line in the sand and make a declaration to the universe what happens. And my portfolio has grown rapidly since then. And so has my team. And so has my operation. And so has my income and my lifestyle, right? And so it's been really, really cool. Today, I'm at, like you said, 3,700 units, a little over $300 million portfolio value. And what I'm most proud of about that is we only owe about $175 to $180 million in total debt and expenses and like equity investors and everything on that portfolio. So there's a lot of equity built up. Not all of it's mine. Big chunk of it is, but some goes to the equity investors, some goes to my JV partners. And yeah, it's kind of where we're at.
Awesome. Thanks for that. So talk a little bit about building your business around your lifestyle. You mentioned it a little bit there, but you know, I think a lot of people nowadays are so focused on their unit count and things like that, but really they're not looking at the bottom line and really building their life for what they want to live. It's easier said than done, but can you go into that a little bit?
Yeah, that's a great question, Kyle. You see a lot of it, especially with social media right now, of like, here's how many units I have. I see it from people that I've joint ventured with and people that are actually equity investors. They might invest 50 grand into a 400 unit apartment building, and all of a sudden they own 400 units. Like, no, you don't. You have a small percentage of equity in 400 units. If you go to Fundrise, you put 5 grand into a portfolio of 10,000 apartment units. It doesn't mean you own 10,000 apartment units, you know? And you see it all the time. And that's why you have to really know, be able to see through the facade of Facebook and social media. So, one, you got to know the right questions to ask. How much equity do you have and do you own in that? And I don't own 100% of mine, but I own about 30%. To 35% on average of my entire portfolio. Some of my own 100% of, some of my own 80% of, some of my own 15 or 20% of. I probably average around 30, 35%. So I have a big chunk and I'm a controlling member of every single property that I own, right? So I want to kind of get that out there. You got to pay attention to that. And what I found is it's actually easier to build a big business than a small business. I remember when I was flipping houses and when I was the solopreneur doing 100% of all the work on everything, I was limited by the amount of time that was in a day, right? And I remember thinking back to, how does Warren Buffett do it? Warren Buffett's got the same 24 hours in a day that I do. And this guy owns billions of dollars of companies and, you know, essentially reads for 6 or 8 hours every single day and then hops on a conference call for an hour a day and he has these executives running his business. And I'm like, how the heck does he do that? And I think when you ask better questions, you start getting better answers. And when you start asking better and better and better questions, you get better and better, better answers. And the best questions lead to the best answers. And I remember saying like, how do I get out of my own way? And I remember talking to this guy who invited me out to this mastermind event that he was hosting. And when we were talking, I was picking up rent physically from a property and taking it to the bank cash to go and deposit it. And he was in Hawaii on a 6-week vacation, then headed to Bora Bora for another 3 weeks. And he was talking to me from the golf cart when he was out on a golf course in the middle of the day. And I'm like, this guy knows something that I don't know. And I remember going out to that mastermind and I threw $5,000 at it, which was a lot of money for me back in that time. This is back in 2015. And the guy ended up saying, hey, here's what you need to do. You got to get out of your own way. I'm like, how do I get out of my own way? It's one of those things where you can't see the whole picture when you're in the frame. You know, you got to step outside and have somebody else give you a perspective shift. And that's what happened. He's like, dude, you just got to stop doing the non-revenue generating activities and hire an assistant. I was like, what do you mean? Like, it's going to cost me 40 grand a year. He goes, no, it's going to cost you 3 grand a month. Try it out for 2 months. If it doesn't work out, you go back to banging your head against the wall. He's like, can you invest 6 grand into this? I was like, yeah, I guess I could. And so that happened in February of 2010. I hired an assistant March of 2015. And in the next 10 months, I tripled my income. I'd made a little over 100 grand the year before. I made $400,000 in the next 10 months. And I was like, holy smokes. And I understood the value of human capital and being able to like arbitrage somebody else's time, somebody else's money in order to go and build wealth myself too, right? Create enough value for them, create enough value for me. And all of a sudden, rising tide floats all boats. You got to be careful though, because I went down this path of just overhiring and I heard, oh, there's a problem. Just pay somebody else to do it, right? Another problem, hire somebody. And what you'll find is the number one reason that a lot of businesses go out of business is because of lack of cash flow and too much overhead. Mm-hmm. And that a lot of times happens because of too much staff, right? And so I overhired, thankfully, learned my lesson, scaled back really quickly. But it's easier to build a bigger business than a smaller business. Why? Because when I go out and buy a 100-unit apartment building, I can have on-site management. I can have on-site maintenance. I can have on-site leasing agent versus, you know, a 20-unit apartment building, I have to go use third party or I have to have enough in that area to then have in-house management. And it's even easier when you have 500 units in a single location because then you have efficiencies. You know, I don't need one property manager for every 100 units. Maybe I only need 3 for 500 units. You know, I don't need as many maintenance staff. Again, levels of efficiencies in that. I pay 3.5% for property management fee for third-party management versus single family where you have to pay 10%, right? Just because it doesn't have the scale that multifamily does. And so I learned that early on that if I can build a bigger business, then I can then attract A players to my team and give them maybe a little piece of the equity. And I'll give you an example. When I was flipping houses, let's say our average profit was $20,000 or $30,000 per house. If you had four A players carving up that pie and splitting that up, it's not that exciting. You know, it's $7,000, whatever per person. That's cool. It doesn't get anybody like really, really amped up. When you carve up a 400 unit apartment portfolio with $10 million of equity amongst 4A players, guess what? You can attract some really high caliber talent that way. And you're not stroking a check for multiple hundreds of thousands of dollars a year in order to attract that A player. You're giving them a piece of the equity. And by giving them a piece of the equity, they take a lot of that stuff that might be more of a draining activity for you versus a driving activity. I love raising private money. I'm really good at it. And I love educating and creating joint ventures and structuring deals and doing that kind. Like the marketing side of things is what I'm really, really good at. I can do operations because I've done it before, but it's not what really drives me. And so that's kind of a draining activity. Same thing with the paperwork and the minutia of filling out PPM and subscription docs and all that kind of stuff. That's not for me. So I can do it, but it takes a lot more energy, a lot more time. I put it on the back burner. So I thought, you know, maybe I can joint venture with somebody who's really good at operations, give them a piece of the equity. Maybe I can joint venture with somebody who's really good at raising private money or talking with investors and can do all the paperwork side of things. And so that's what I've done. I've created a C-suite in my business of a COO, a chief investment officer, a director of acquisitions, joint venture partners who are great at operations, and they handle all the heavy lifting. They're kind of the engine that run the business. I'm the fuel that runs the engine. So by sharing information on social media, being on a podcast, educating people about what we do and how we do it, we get deal flow, we get money flow, and we get joint venture operators that we can then fund deals for and get involved in projects that way where, again, man, I don't need to have 100% of a grape. I want a quarter of a watermelon. There's a lot more juice in the squeeze of a quarter of a watermelon.
How do you know when it's time to add that next person or make your first hire?
Good question. I would always do it sooner, right? And do it sooner than later. Don't wait until you're burning the candle at both ends kind of thing. If you're doing deals, but you've got to have an abundance mindset, right? And I'll give you an example. I brought in my attorney, who was my business attorney for 6 years, and I brought him in as an equity partner in my business about 18 months ago. And so 18 months ago, I came to him. He's a solopreneur also, right? He's going through the same crap that I was going through early on, where he's trading his time for money. He's not building wealth doing it that way. He's doing 100% of everything in his business. And I remember going to him, and he's working his tail off to make $100,000 a year. I go to him, I'm like, listen, man, can't pay you $100,000 a year, but I'll give you $4,000 a month, $48,000 a year. Like at the time, I'm buying one deal a month. I'm dropping $15,000 a month, $13,000 to $15,000 a month on PPM docs alone. I'm already ahead there. And then I said, and you deal with all the investors, all the capital management, all the investor relations, everything on an ongoing basis. I'll feed you the investors. You handle all that side of things. And then I'll give you 15% of my equity portion of any deal that we get involved in. And so now he has a basis of salary, meaning he knows that his mortgage is paid. He knows that his car payment's made. He knows that he's got clothes on his back and a roof over his head and food on the table, right? So all those expenses are taken care of. But now he can actually start building wealth. And in the past 12 months, just last year alone, he increased his net worth by multiple seven figures by the deals we've done. And so it's a grand slam deal for him. It took a ton off my plate. My net worth increased by eight figures last year because I was able to do more deals because I could siphon off a lot of the time-consuming stuff that I was taking on. I could then give it to him, right? I already had a COO and he handles all the operations. So I'm really only needed whenever we're in acquisition mode. If we're going out and finding deals and sourcing deals, I'm posting about it. I'm telling people about it. I'm educating people about it. And then I have people who send us opportunities and I give that to my acquisitions director. And then once we take something down, my COO handles it, right? When we need to raise private money, my chief investment officer handles it. And so I figured out that there's essentially three buckets that everything falls into in real estate, and it's deals, money, and operations. And so if I can find an A player to put in charge of each one of those categories in my business, then guess what? I have the lifestyle that I want, right? And so I'm able to drive a lot of that deal flow, money flow, operations, JV partners, whatever that looks like, just by marketing. And that's very scalable. And I don't have to spend 8 hours a day doing it. I can be on a podcast. I can post on social media. And it's powerful, man. The amount of reach and the amount of attention that you get from being on social media, it's unlike anything I've ever seen. And you can utilize it to really generate a lot of wealth, especially in commercial real estate.
Agreed. What are the top three actions to be successful in commercial real estate investing?
I'd say those three, man. I'd say you got to find deals, you got to source deals, source money, and make sure your operations are dialed in. If you're doing those three things, I don't care if the economy's up or the economy's down. If you can source deals, you're doing well, right? Like right now, the economy's up. You can source deals. It's easy to find money, and operations can be expensive right now because contractors are charging whatever they want, and you got to pay for good talent because unemployment's so low. But I remember when I got first started in 2009, I bought my first property. Deals were everywhere, right? You could source deals, but money was really hard to come by. So if you could source deals and money and operations was cheap, like don't ever waste a good recession. Like there's amazing talent out there during a recession that you could bring in-house that used to be making $300,000, $400,000 a year that you might be able to bring in for 10 grand a month, you know, or 5 grand a month plus some equity in a deal. And it just kind of depends, right? But if you're good at all three of those activities, finding deals, finding money, and operations, you can be successful in real estate.
So you scaled pretty quickly to $300 million in multifamily assets. Do you feel like in order to scale that fast, you have to have a high risk tolerance?
Maybe. I don't call it risk though, because it's very calculated, right? My business model is exactly what I would do when I was flipping houses. I have to be all in for 65% of the after repair value. So if I was flipping a house that's worth 100 grand when I sell it, I have to be all in purchase price, renovation cost, holding cost for $65,000. I just took that same model. I've never been to a real estate course. I've never been to a commercial real estate class or read a book on it. I just took that same model and I duplicated it in commercial real estate. So if a building's worth 10 million bucks, I need to be all in for $6.5 million. And then I just have that buy, renovate, rent, refinance model. That's my entire model. I go and get a 70% LTV loan at $10 million. So that puts me at a $7 million loan. I can pay off my investors. I can pay off my acquisition loan. And now I have long-term non-recourse agency debt in place and I can hold the property long-term. Then I can recycle my investors' capital and do another deal, another deal, another deal. And that total cycle only takes on average about 15 to 18 months. So I'm not parking my investors' money out there for long-term. So I think when you can mitigate risk in a way that gets your investors' money off the table pretty quickly, when you're buying at a wholesale price, when you're not speculating on appreciation, you're actually creating appreciation by doing the value add work. You're not afraid to roll up your sleeves and get your hands dirty. You know, I'm mitigating risk with long-term non-recourse fixed interest rate debt. I'm buying for cash flow, not based on speculation and resale of the property or, you know, hoping that interest rates stay where they are right now and then selling it in 5 years. You know, hoping the economy is exactly the same. Like, I think that's very speculative. I'd rather cycle out my investors right now, take all my chips off the table, all my investors' chips off the table, just leave house money in play. And when you have a 10-year term on your loan, guess what, man? You can ride out any sort of storm. And so you can wait for the market to crash and then come back. And if you bought in 2006 at the last peak, even going through the Great Recession, the worst housing recession we've ever been through, by 2016, 10 years later, guess what? Values were back with a vengeance, you know? And so I think because of my model, I'm able to mitigate risk. And because of that, I don't feel like it's a risky endeavor. And at the same time, man, I'm thinking, what's the worst thing that could happen? Like if I'm always buying for cash flow, not based on speculation, if I'm always buying, like I'm all into my buildings, in year two, I'm at a 10% cap rate based on my cost basis. So that allows me to then refinance at a 7%, 6.5% cap, cash out my investors again, right? So worst case scenario, I'm at a 10 cap. I have financing in place that's costing me 5%. Like right now, agency debt is close to 4%. I just got a loan for 3.9, 15-year term, 5 years interest only, 10-year term thereafter, 30-year amp. Let's say I'm paying 5% for short-term bridge type financing for 3 years or whatever, but I'm at such a low basis. I'm at 60 cents on the dollar on most of my properties. And it gives you options, right? I think options are a hidden formula for success. It's like, dude, it's like golfing. You golf at all?
Yep. We both do.
Yep. So I'm a really bad golfer. If I go golfing by myself or if I'm just focused on my ball, my score is going to suck, right? I'm going to lose because I only have one option. But if we're in a scramble and there's you, me, Lolita, and somebody else, guess what? I'm good for one good shot per hole though, right? Like, so if we can each have one great shot per hole, even if the other three balls are bad, the three options are bad, you got one good option, you can have a lot of success. So I think if you're always buying at a low enough basis and you're always going to have options on what you can do with that property and different exit strategies, right? So worst case scenario, if I have a 10% cap rate, 10% return on my investment, and my total cost of capital is only 6%, then guess what? I can always ride out that storm and have enough cash flow to cover my operating expenses, cover my debt service, and put some cash flow in our pocket on an ongoing basis. So I don't think you have to be like really risk tolerant. I think you just need to be smart and have a good business model.
Yep. You talk a lot about buying apartments at wholesale prices. And in today's market, it's really hot. How do you do that? How are you going about getting wholesale prices where people are mainly overpaying, to be honest?
That's a big question. I won't do a deal. I've seen how much your net worth can increase by buying apartment buildings, but I also know how much it can decrease if you do one bad deal and how one bad deal can just take your legs out. And so we are very non-emotional about buying properties. As ambitious as I am, I won't do a bad deal. In fact, I try to kill every single deal that comes across our desk. And if we can't kill it, then we know it's a good deal, right? So how do you do that? Man, it's a numbers game. Like, you just have to be out there sorting through deals as fast as you possibly can and looking at as many deals as you can and swinging the bat. I'll give you an example. About a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, the Chrysler building in New York City, probably the third most famous building in all of New York City, came on the market. Now, this was bought for $800 million at the bottom of the recession in 2010, 2011. Some group out of, I think, the Middle East bought it for $800 million at the bottom of the recession. And it's one of those deals where it comes on the market and it's like price to be determined by the marketplace. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So everybody knows about it. Everybody sees it. This happened a year ago, right? In that peak of a housing cycle. So everybody was like, telling themselves stories. They're making up stories in their own head. I'm saying they bought it at the recession for $800 million. They're going to want more than that. One, they're going to want more than what they want. And we're at the peak now. So we're going to want probably a lot more than that. And blah, blah, blah. And they're running the numbers and they're like, ah, it doesn't make sense. I'm not even going to make an offer on this. Some group out of like Sweden comes in and they run the numbers and they're like, okay, you know, it makes sense, around $150 million for us. And they make an offer on a building that's sold in a recession for $800 million. And they make an offer for $150 million, less than 20 cents on the dollar in the peak of a housing market cycle. You got some brass balls to make that offer, right? Mm-hmm. They make the offer. You know what happens? It got accepted. They bought the building for $150 million last year. How is that possible? Because you can't hit home runs if you don't swing the bat. And I see a lot of people underwriting deals and then they just walk away from them. Dude, we make an offer at 400 deals every single month. Most of them, we're told to go and kick rocks, right? We're told to go, you know, fly a kite, get the hell out of here, go fishing somewhere else. We're okay with that. We don't get emotional over it. But if you don't swing the bat, you can't hit a home run. All right. What's the quote? You miss 100% of the shots that you don't take. And so we sort through deals. We don't sit there with a calculator, an Excel spreadsheet that's 18 sheets deep and spend an hour calculating every single deal. We have very quick metrics. We can look at a deal in an instant and say, is it worth spending more time on this or not? And if it is, then we can dive deeper into it. We don't look at any property until after a letter of intent is signed and approved and agreed upon. I don't look at anything. I just assume it's screwed up. I'm going to have to put X number of dollars into it. I know exactly where the rents are going to be. I know exactly what all that stuff looks like. And then during the process of a signed letter of intent to getting to a signed contract, that's when we go out and do all of our due diligence, right? Before the earnest money's up and do a lot of this stuff. And we're going and walking as many units as we possibly can. We're looking at the financials and stuff, but the physical due diligence is done during that time frame. And that way I can not waste the seller's time and not waste our time by going to a contract on this thing if I know that it's more messed up than what they told us, right? Like, I'm going off of what they're telling us when we're making these offers. And if it's more messed up, then I can go back to them, not feel bad about it because I said, hey, I believed you when you told me that it only needed this much work. Here's a not to exceed bid on the plumbing for another $75,000 that you didn't tell me about. Like, what are we going to do about this? Okay, I'll take 75 grand off the purchase price. Okay, great. Thanks. Let's keep on moving forward, right? I'm a very serious buyer. If I tell you I'm going to close on stuff, I'm going to close on it. But at the same time, if you tell me that the building is in good shape and then I find out it's not, I'm going to come back and say, hey, man, we got to do something about this. So it allows us to, again, sort through a lot of deals by thinking about it that way and making offers on everything. We look at 20 deals a day and we probably average 2 to 3 buildings a month.
Love it. That's awesome. Lalita is going to take us into our final 4 questions. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by asset protection attorney, Wayne Patton. We all spend a lot of time thinking about ways to make more money. But how much time have you spent thinking about legal strategies to protect your wealth? Whether you're a professional, an investor, or an entrepreneur, you are at risk of being targeted in a lawsuit. Wayne is an attorney who specializes only in asset protection strategies, like the use of offshore trusts. If you'd like to learn more about how you can protect your assets, visit mwpatton.com or assetprotection.law. Mention this podcast and Wayne will waive his customary $750 initial consultation fee. Again, the website is mwpatton.com or assetprotection.law. Or you can call Wayne at 877-727-1092. Call now and get protected today.
Tim, what is the one tool you use in real estate investing that you cannot do without?
The one tool I use in real estate investing that I cannot do without, I feel like it's a cop out, but I'd say my team. I love having a team. I love surrounding myself with A players and having people with a common goal and a common vision and a common future on my team and understanding where we are, right? And these guys have been with me when we were going through the grind and the hustle and the tough days where we skip paychecks for a month, 2 months at a time, you know, and we're trying to get through it. And so I wouldn't want to do this without them.
Can you tell us a story about your biggest mistake in real estate investing and the main takeaway for our listeners?
Yeah, I made them all, right? I've been investing for 11 years, been in real estate for 15 years, but I've also been doing high volume for that amount of time. So I've been through all of it. And the only building I ever lost money on, apartment building that I've ever lost money on, I've lost money on a bunch of houses, right? Like I was really bad at that. I've only lost money on one apartment building. And that's because I bought from a buddy, former buddy now. And he told me, listen, it's 80% occupied. Here's the rent roll. Here's all the leases, blah, blah, blah. And I believed him. And I did not cross-reference rent collections. And just because something's occupied does not mean it's economically occupied. And so that was a lesson I learned a few years ago. I thought I'd turn around this 44-unit apartment building and flip it out in 6 months and make 300 grand on it. And I ended up, it was 80% occupied, but only 25% economically occupied. So I had to turn an extra 25 apartments, and I had all the lease up fees, and I had all the eviction fees, and I had no income on any of those units for 6 months, right? And so it derailed the finances so much that I ended up having to write a check to get rid of the building. Now, here's the cool thing about real estate. Even if you overpay for something, if you can hang on to it long enough, it'll eventually pay down enough principal, appreciate enough, and you can not lose money. The thing was, it was C-class. It was 44 units, a little bit smaller than what most of our stuff is. And it took up too much of my team's bandwidth. And so I decided that instead of holding this thing for another 3 years and breaking even on it, let me just write a check for about 40, 50 grand and dump it right now. And we just got rid of it. So make sure you're doing all the due diligence. From a physical standpoint, walk every single unit. Do not take a seller's word that, oh yeah, these 3 units are indicative of the entire complex. These are the only 3 you need to see. Like that's not the case, right? Buyers are liars and sellers are worse. And then also make sure you're doing all the financial due diligence and paper due diligence on the property as well. Don't force deals, right? Try to kill deals. If you can't kill it, then it's a good deal.
What is it that you need to do now to grow your life to the next level?
I am in the process of actually stepping out because I still do a little bit of the private money raising. I'm stepping out of a lot of that right now and just focusing on, I heard Dan Gilbert say he owns the Cavs, Cleveland Cavaliers, he owns Quicken Loans. And he said the highest return on his time are the things that are not quantifiable. Like doing a podcast, you guys run these podcasts, you can't quantify what will come from this podcast, right? Now we're going to cross-pollinate followings. Like people who follow me are going to follow you. People who follow you are going to follow me. And that's okay. There's an abundance of people and opportunity out there. And who knows, maybe we do a deal together. You know, you never know. You can't be quantified by taking an hour and just hopping on a podcast. And so I want to focus on those activities. It's what I'm really good at. It's what I really like doing. And what gives me the most fulfillment. And that's kind of where I am in my life. The finance side of things, taken care of. Now I'm just looking for fulfillment. And what fulfills me the most is making an impact on other people's lives and helping other people grow their net worth and really just doing the stuff that I like to do. I don't have to do any of the stuff that I don't want to do anymore. And so I'm like, I don't need to do that. So I'm not doing it anymore. And that's really like, it's more of a trimming of the fat and trimming of the unfulfilling type stuff in my life is what I'm really engaging in 2020.
I love that. And finally, where can people find out more about you?
I appreciate that. Yeah. I mean, connect with me on social media. I post on Facebook a lot, got a ton of free content there. I do a lot of stuff on YouTube as well. And a lot of stuff on Instagram, LinkedIn, all that. So connect with me there. Yeah. My website's legacywealthholdings.com. So yeah, there's like a bunch of free content on there as well. If anybody's got questions, just feel free to submit a question on there. And it's me and my team that answer all those. So yeah, I appreciate you guys. Thank you so much for having me. This is awesome.
Well, thank you. I think our listeners will really enjoy that one. So thanks for your time and sharing your experience with us.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Tim.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please go to iTunes and leave a rating and written review to help us grow and reach more listeners. You can also go to the Passive Income Through Multifamily Real Estate Group on Facebook so you can connect with Kyle and Lolita and ask your questions that you want them to answer on the show. Subscribe too so that you can get the latest episodes. Lastly, to stay updated, head on over to limitless-estates.com and sign up for the newsletter. If you're interested in partnering with Kyle and Lolita, sign up on the Contact Us page so you can talk to them directly. Thanks again for joining us. Be sure to tune in again next week for another episode.